You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Republican National Convention is now in full swing. Joining us to give us the latest developments is WNYC's Anna Sale. She's been in Tampa covering the RNC for its freecountry.org. Anna, it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks, Leonard.
Can you give us a sense of what the mood is like in the convention hall?
Well, I haven't been over there yet this morning. I was at a New York delegation breakfast this morning, but yesterday you just could feel this very steady buildup of energy. I mean, there were, to begin with, it was, you know, Monday was such a bizarre day, just 2 minutes of being in session and people not really knowing what to do with all their extra time with the convention proceedings having been postponed till Tuesday. And yesterday you had sort of, you know, low-level Republican candidates, office holders making their speeches through the afternoon. But finally, when you got to the kind of Republican governor stars, Scott Walker, John Kasich, that's the Wisconsin governor and Ohio governor, and then leading up to Ann Romney's speech, I think, was the most energy of the night. Chris Christie's speech followed that, but I think Ann Romney sort of showed she was the real sort of standout performer of the night, and the crowd left totally energized.
Well, you mentioned that you were at a New York delegation meeting this morning. Speaker of the House John Boehner spoke in front of it. What did he have to say?
It was actually pretty interesting. He said that he has a strategy of focusing on what he calls orphan districts, which are Republican districts and vulnerable Democratic seats in states where the presidential campaign is not being hard fought and where there's not a significant Senate campaign, he said, even though there is a Republican challenger to Kirsten Gillibrand in New York. But he said that New York is a place where he thinks the Republicans can pick up more seats. You'll remember that New York actually added 6 Republican seats in the 2010 election. He said there are more seats he thinks they can get, so he's been focused on sort of building a grassroots ground game in districts where there are, you know, what he sees as vulnerable Democratic incumbents to try to actually build the Republican majority through a state like New York.
How many congressional seats in New York State are considered competitive?
There's 27 seats now after redistricting, and about 8 are considered competitive, and 4 are currently held by Republicans, 4 are currently held by Democrats.
Now, does that suggest that New York is moving toward the right? Because a number of the seats that were picked up were the seats held by Democrats who were caught up in scandals.
That's true. But, you know, you look at a seat, you know, maybe upstate New York, Buffalo is an area where John Boehner mentioned. Eastern Long Island is an area he mentioned. Rochester. So there certainly are pockets in New York where, you know, we think of New York as this very blue state. And absolutely, when it comes to a presidential race, that's been the story. But Republicans really see that this is a place where they can, you know, in redrawn districts, they can have an edge and get some more Republicans to Washington.
Haven't you been visiting with a number of swing state delegations?
I have. I've been talking to delegates from Wisconsin, from Florida, from Colorado, Virginia. And it's interesting because, of course, I've been doing this road trip across swing states this summer and talking to voters who are undecided. And at these conventions, that is not who you're talking to. When you're talking to delegates, you are talking to the absolute true believers. So it's difficult to get a sense of what actually, you know, their take on what's going on in their state, if that's something that's actually what's happening or if that's just sort of the party line. But you do get sort of some interesting insights. I talked to a woman from Greeley, Colorado, which is in kind of northern Colorado. It's right by a swing county where Fort Collins is. And she says she's on the Obama campaign listserv just to kind of do some spying. And when President Obama was in Fort Collins earlier this week, she said she kept getting emails and emails that tickets were still available. So that made feel like there was maybe a turn in that part of the state. So that's the kind of insight you get talking to delegates.
And what kinds of delegates are you meeting? Are they mostly establishment conservatives? Are they Tea Party supporters? How many of them are first-time convention goers?
It's interesting. I have found when I, you know, sort of walk around and I, you know, talk to a young delegate thinking it'll be their first time coming to a convention. And for the most part, those delegates fall into 2 categories. They're either people who have inherited Republican Party politics as either, you know, mostly through their family. Their parents were either office holders or party activists as well. Or the young people are part of the insurgent Ron Paul contingent. That's what I found talking to delegates. You also find occasionally, you know, people who got involved in the last 4 years, kind of motivated by the bad economy and have sort of turned out. I wouldn't say, I haven't talked to a lot of people who say, you know, I'm a hardcore Tea Party activist and that's why I'm here. More people who, you know, just inspired to get more involved during the Obama presidency, but not hearing kind of this Tea Party rally and cry like you did during the 2010 midterms.
Is it your sense that they're most enthusiastic about electing Mitt Romney or about beating Barack Obama?
Certainly the enthusiasm is about getting President Obama out of office. And I'm trying to gauge how the enthusiasm for Mitt Romney grows during the week. In my sort of early conversations this week, nobody would bring up Mitt Romney the first time I asked them, you know, why they were excited at being at the Republican convention. It was all about trying to build energy to get President Obama out of office. But I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Ann Romney's speech, you know, if that gets people fired up, if Paul Ryan's speech, what that does tonight. He's speaking tonight at the convention, and finally Mitt Romney's speech on Thursday. But I would say the beginning of the week when people were first arriving, you didn't get this overwhelming sense that people were just so pumped to be in Tampa to support Mitt Romney. It's all about getting President Obama out of office.
You mentioned Representative Ron Paul. He's caused quite a stir at the convention. Have you had a chance to speak with any of his supporters?
I have, and they are upset. And it's really sort of an interesting thing. I mean, what they're upset about is party rules about how delegates get picked from different states. So, because under current rules, it's kind of it depends on particular states' rules. So you have a state like Iowa, where you'll remember we paid so much attention to the results of the Iowa caucus, but it turns out the results of the Iowa caucus does not determine who ends up going to the convention. There's a second process that happens that really depends on who's more organized, and the Ron Paul supporters in Iowa out-organized the Santorum and the Mitt Romney supporters, so their delegation is by far Ron Paul supporters. So they actually voted more votes from Iowa when there was the official delegate count went to Ron Paul than went to Mitt Romney. And so the Ron Paul supporters are really upset that the party, the Republican Party nationally, wanted to change that. They wanted to say that your delegates had to be bound to the results of your primary or caucus. And so that was one of the rules that was on the floor yesterday. And then there was also something that came up on the floor yesterday, which was about which delegates were officially being seated as official delegates. I don't know if you've heard about the controversy about the Maine delegates. That was a situation mm-hmm. where initially there were more Ron Paul supporters in that delegation than Mitt Romney supporters. It got changed right before the convention. So this is usually sort of boring party business that happens, you know, these opening resolutions where there's ayes and noes and nobody's really paying attention. The Ron Paul supporters were really paying attention to that on the floor yesterday. And so when there was a voice vote for which delegates were going to be officially recognized as official convention delegates, there were the ayes, which were for the sort of party, you know, Republican Party delegates, the kind of less of the Ron Paul supporters from Maine. The ayes said it, and then there was calls for the no, and the noes actually were louder than the ayes. I was there in the room, but the at the front of the room, the RNC chairman said, oh, the ayes have it, and they moved ahead. And so that's what kind of set off the Ron Paul delegates. That's when you heard the boos and all of that yesterday. That's where that drama came from.
Doesn't he present something of a dilemma for the Republican Party? First of all, he represents the libertarian wing, but also many of his supporters are young people that the party is trying to attract. And the problem is that one of the ways he appeals to the young is that he's opposed to U.S. military policies, while Mitt Romney has been calling for an even stronger military.
Yeah, and that's something that you hear from the Ron Paul supporters. They said, you know, the party's making a terrible mistake by alienating these young Ron Paul supporters, that not just young supporters, but energetic supporters, that's where the energy is. And on the Republican side, they argue. And they say that the party's making a terrible mistake by making them feel outside of that process and that, you know, we'll leave the party altogether kind of thing. You know, but I haven't found a Ron Paul delegate yet who has said, I'm leaving here and voting for President Obama because of the way we've been treated here. I think there are certainly hurt feelings, and I don't think that you'll have a lot of these folks cozying up to establishment Republicans anytime soon. But what it means in terms of where Ron Paul's supporters are going to go in November, it's not clear. I've had some tell me they're just going to write in Ron Paul and not vote for Mitt Romney or President Obama.
I'm talking with WNYC's Anna Sale, who's in Tampa covering the Republican National Convention for itsafreecountry.org. The Republican Party made a major pitch to women voters last night with speeches by Nikki Haley and Ann Romney. What was the crux of the GOP's argument that women should support it?
Well, I think you heard Ann Romney's pitch was certainly, I understand you, and that whether you're a single, married, or widowed woman, she said at one point, you know, I understand what you're concerned about, pocketbook issues, the future of your family, concerned about the well-being of your children, and really tried to make this pitch that the Republican Party can answer those concerns.
We have a clip.
Yes.
Let's listen to it, and then we can do a follow-up on it.
But the last few years have been harder than they needed to be. It's all the little things that, Pat, the price at the pump you just can't believe, the grocery bills that just get bigger, all those things that used to be free, like school sports, are now one more bill to pay. It's all the little things that pile up to become big things, and the big things, the good jobs, the chance at college, that home you want to buy, just get harder. Everything has become harder.
It sounds like she wanted to emphasize that she and Mitt Romney understand the concerns of average Americans, which the poll numbers would suggest is something, a hurdle that they're really going to have to overcome.
It's the polls, and it's also what I've heard from voters. I mean, the sense of how on earth can Mitt Romney understand what I'm going through? You know, if you're somebody who's been struggling with work or feeling like you've got to work more hours to stay exactly where you've been, the idea that Mitt Romney, who's gloriously wealthy compared to the average voter, understands that, that's been a bit of a leap for some voters that I've talked to. So there you have Ann Romney saying, I understand. And she said at one point, I know these voters. I've met many of you. I mean, she really made the pitch that she kind of gets it and understands it from having campaigned for all these many months now. So clearly the Romney family, you know, can't make the case that they're the average middle-class American family. But I think her speech went a long way to say to voters who don't feel like the Romneys understand them that at least Ann Romney made the case that she does.
Is this a theme the Republicans are going to stress when Michelle Bachmann claimed that Barack Obama is too wealthy to relate to the average American? Was she just doing a Michelle Bachmann, or is that something that the party may also pursue?
Well, I don't think the Republican Party can really have a message about President Obama's wealth compared to Mitt Romney's wealth. I think that was probably a bit of a losing argument for them. But I do think there's been some interesting conversation here at the convention. Frank Luntz, the famous sort of pollster and Republican message maker, spoke to the New York delegation today before Speaker Boehner, and he made a really interesting point. He said, look, you know, you can't just pay attention to what you're saying and communicating what you think. You have to pay attention to what voters are hearing. And what this is really about is pulling over 7% of voters who supported Obama 4 years ago to the Republican side. So you can't criticize them, you can't attack them, or they're not going to listen to you. So it's kind of an interesting dilemma for the Republican Party base, because there is such a sense of animosity towards President Obama. But the voters they have to appeal to, they've got to appeal more to that sense of disappointment in the president rather than sort of outright rejection that's the feeling of the Republican Party base.
A lot of the applause lines I heard were kind of anti-union from Nikki Haley, from Chris Christie. You think that's going to be a campaign, one of the campaign themes?
I was really stunned by that yesterday. Scott Walker, the Wisconsin governor who took on the unions in the collective bargaining fight there, when he announced the official roll call vote for Wisconsin, and it was sort of, you know, at the very tail end of that, but when they announced his name, there was this resounding and sustained applause for him, more energy than there'd been all day. And it was the same when he came back to give his speech. I mean, that is the where the energy about from the Republican base is this idea of you know, reining in public sector unions. And you heard Chris Christie's line about, we're not about teachers' unions, we're about teachers. That was another big applause line. But again, it's who your audience is. If you're going out to persuadable voters who, you know, could kind of go either way, I haven't heard a lot of people saying that the causes of their problems have come from teachers' unions. I've heard them say, you know, I feel uncertain about the future. I don't know, you know, I'm nervous about the debt. I don't know who can make the right decisions to get the economy right because it's been so long. I mean, a pitch about teachers' unions is not going to reach those voters.
Well, a lot of Republicans are now saying that the so-called war against women is really an invention of the Democrats. Virginia Governor Bob McDonald spoke last night. He came under criticism for signing a bill which required an ultrasound examination before getting an abortion. Isn't he a bit of an odd choice for a speaker on a night when the party's trying to close the gender gap with the Democrats?
We also had Rick Santorum, who's very, very strong on abortion
and same-sex marriage.
Exactly. And what's been interesting, and this, of course, is happening just a week after the sort of big blow-up about Todd Akin, the Missouri Senate candidate's remarks about, quote-unquote, legitimate rape and the rape exception for abortion. And that has actually been really interesting, walking around talking to women delegates about that issue. And I spoke to these two older women from Louisiana. They both were wearing these pens, you know, part of the Republican pro-life coalition. And I asked them about Todd Akin and about that rape exception. And one of them felt very strongly that her pro-life beliefs led her to feel like there could never be an exception for abortion. The other really felt like there needed to be a rape exception. And when I talked to women about that question, that seemed to be a very emotional question. So I think Republicans want to steer clear of that rape exception question in terms of a message to women. But other Republican delegates have told me, look, like, I resent the fact that when Democrats talk about women voters, they assume all I care about is family planning, contraception, and abortion. What I care about is the economy. So that's the Republican pitch that you'll hear, that women voters care about the economy, they care about their family budgets, they care about the bills they have to pay at their kitchen table, and that's going to be the Republican pitch to women.
And to some degree, that's what Chris Christie was talking about. Let's hear a little clip from his keynote address.
Now, the disciples of yesterday's politics, they always underestimate the will of the people. They assumed our people were selfish, that when told of the difficult problems, the tough choices, and the complicated solutions, that they would simply turn their backs, that they would decide it was every man for himself. They were wrong. The people of New Jersey stepped up. They shared in the sacrifice. And you know what else they did? They rewarded politicians who led instead of politicians who pandered.
Now, I'm trying to figure out if that last part about pandering is a dig at President Obama or at Mitt Romney. He has been criticized for not mentioning Mitt Romney's name very much during the keynote speech.
I think that's what made it kind of an odd fit, coming right after Ann Romney's speech, which was such a passionate sort of testimony about Mitt Romney's readiness to be president and his personal character. And then you had Chris Christie come up, and the focus of his speech was really the Chris Christie brand, which is, I tackle hard problems, I speak hard truths, and we get things done. But that's not the Mitt Romney brand. I mean, that last line about pandering, I mean, that is that's the central argument against Mitt Romney from the Democrats and from some uncertain voters about whether they can trust what Mitt Romney's really going to do because his positions have changed over the years. So I think that that's also part of the you know, sense of Chris Christie's speech not being a full-throated, you know, endorsement of Mitt Romney. I mean, it was certainly about how Chris Christie thinks the Republican Party should solve problems, but those cutaway shots to Mitt Romney during the Chris Christie speech, if you didn't see it, it was a little awkward. Mitt Romney didn't look fully comfortable while Chris Christie was making that speech.
Anna Sale will participate in WMIC's convention special with Brian Lehrer tonight at 7 p.m. You can also follow her on Twitter at Anna Sale. And Anna, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Sure. Thanks, Leonard.